I am not a morning person. If left alone on a Saturday morning, I have the ability to sleep until noon or even later. At our house, we have a delicious Saturday morning routine of Marshall getting up, watching English Premier League soccer, reading, running errands, or whatever else seems good to him, until eventually I shuffle out to the living room, bleary-eyed. He hands me a cup of coffee and fills me in on the third of the day that I have happily missed. So I maybe felt just a little set up when I received the invitation to preach on a Sunday morning with a theme of wake up. The stay awake parts of the text this morning, no problem. But waking up, not so good for me, even in this era of people being woke. Lately, my Saturday mornings have had this routine interrupted by the sounds of heavy construction equipment and helicopters. Thanks to a giant utility pole being installed in my yard. That's our house. Down in the lower left-hand corner, you can see the snow on the roof and the flags, and then there's the pole. And thanks to Michael Dickens for providing the pictures and video we're going to see this morning. So this giant utility pole is being installed in my yard to replace one that used to be visible from my yard between the Millrace and Canal. So there's the picture, and now if all cooperates, we're going to have a video. So what you'll see here when your eyes adjust is actually three full-grown adults on ladders that have been dropped off. This is the third one being dropped off by the helicopter, where this line worker will attach to the arm. And then, oh, well, so, th and then the helicopter flies away. So, this is what we've been watching and hearing at our house. It's a strange image. You may find it unsettling or exhilarating, or maybe a little of both. I'm going to seek to make the case this morning that this odd image of people on dangling ladders can be a metaphor for the call of Advent. We'll see. It's an understatement to say I have an uncomfortable relationship with this new utility pole in my yard. And the process that has put it there. Its appearance has not been good news to me. In fact, I would like to chop it down, like the trees and shrubs that were removed from our yard to make space for this construction project. My brother suggested changing this morning's Isaiah passage. The passage goes on to the very familiar part. We had part of it in the call to worship, but it goes on to a very familiar section about turning swords into plowshares and spears into pruning hooks. So my brother suggested changing the passage this morning to turning a giant utility pole into a whole lot of pruning hooks. And I really wish that were an option. But no matter how much I dislike the pole, it's hard to completely ignore something that is 152 and a half feet tall, that is right outside my house and visible from both inside and outside the house. I'm going to be honest and tell you that I have a similar revulsion for this morning's Matthew text that Dave read for us. Two will be in the field. One will be taken and one will be left. It would be so easy to discard this passage because it brings to mind the fearmongers who predict that the end of the world will come on a specific day and time. When I mentioned this text to my sister, she started singing a Larry Norman song, "I Wish We'd All Been Ready." Anybody else recognize that song? Oh, my. Okay. Yes. "I Wish We'd All Been Ready" that scarred and scared her at summer camp as a kid. It also reminds me of an awful movie I saw in high school that was a poorly disguised attempt to scare people into salvation by portraying a fatal car accident in which only half the teens in the car were deemed worthy to get into heaven. So I debated whether to even mention this text this morning. Every time I read it over the last few weeks, I could hear the voice of Jen Eberle in my ear. And oh, was she complaining. Why? Why do we need to hear an end of the world text today? Could we please just be happy about Thanksgiving and Christmas for 1 week? Just one. Just one. But the people who developed the lectionary clearly saw reason to include it. All 3 years of the lectionary cycle have one of these doom and gloom gospel texts placed in the first week of Advent. In various years of teaching Sunday school, I've asked my class why, when there are so many stories in the Bible, why would we pick some to tell every single year? The kids quickly respond that those stories must be important for some reason. Indeed. And while I'm skeptical about a trio of end times passages to kick off Advent, I do think it matters to tell the Advent story of God with us every year. A blogger from Patheos described Advent this way. It's a time for hopes and dreams, for provocative possibilities that take us beyond the world as we know it, to a world as it could be and should be, a place of healing, restoration, justice, and shalom. The spirit of Advent invites us to examine our values and lifestyle. This isn't so much a matter of holding off on singing Christmas carols until Christmas Eve, but to be people who already have one foot in God's new age and strive to be the change we want to see in the world. So as much as I want to muse on that lovely Isaiah 2 text, or just be happy that we're all on the way to Bethlehem again, I decided to dig in with hopes of discovering what this pesky Matthew text might have to offer us. Making a way where there is no way, indeed. In my exploring of the Matthew text, I found two debates. The first was whether the passage is about the second coming, when Jesus will return to defeat evil and reign over the earth, or about the rapture, when God will whisk away the faithful from the earth and leave the rest to suffer. I didn't invest time in that discussion. The other argument was over which person is actually saved. Is it the person who was taken away or the one who is left behind? But that's still a debate over the technicalities of the end of the world. Instead, what I find puzzling in this text is the disconnect between the examples in the passage. So in the early verses about Noah, the people who were partying get swept away. But in the later verses, it's the people who are working that get separated into groups for either prize or punishment. And then the moral of the story is to stay awake so a thief can't break into the house. Something here just is not adding up. It's the boldface part of the text up here that has been bumping around in my brain. Why does only one person get rewarded when both seem to be doing the same work? I did not find an answer in my reading, but it does seem an awful lot like the world all around us, where divides can also be puzzling and painful. There are those with easy access to healthcare, education, and lucrative jobs. There are those with no reason to fear a traffic stop, or who can still ignore climate change. But others must face the inequalities of this world and this community every day. It makes me think of a book that was beloved to me in my childhood. I don't know how many times I read The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe from the Chronicles of Narnia. When the children first enter Narnia, it is always winter and never Christmas. But for me, a healthy, white, upper middle class, straight, cisgender, married, educated Christian, I get to function as though it's always Christmas and never winter. I don't have to pay attention to the gloom and doom all around me. Now, I realize that this is taking this text somewhere it probably wasn't intended to go. But if this text is an image of the future, it's an arbitrary one. Maybe even suggesting that it doesn't matter how we live. There is nothing that tells us what distinguishes who stays and who goes. What do we do with those tensions? How do we live in this temporary space like those line workers hanging from ladders on my utility pole? I might be tempted to cling to the ladder and hope for the best. Or better still, just stay in bed and wait it out. But if we are willing to stay awake, trusting the safety harness will hold us while we do our work until the helicopter returns, there is an invitation waiting for us in Advent. Here I will widen the lens to the other lectionary texts of the morning. The last time we encountered these texts was in Advent 2016. Remember that November and December? We were trying to make sense of a presidential election that had magnified divides. It didn't seem to be much of a stretch that year to talk about the end of the world being closer than we thought. Now we come to these texts again. The prophets continue to warn us of disaster ahead. And human treachery is still with us, just as ancient and just as present as it felt in 2016, if not more so. Things cannot continue as they are. But according to the Believer's Church commentaries, none of this morning's texts were intended as a specific prediction of the end times. Instead, they were meant as instruction about our ethical responsibilities in the here and now. The Isaiah text that we heard in the call to worship proclaims a vision of God's promises and then urges believers to come, not in the future, but today. Come, let's walk in the light of the Lord. Pay attention to the signs of the times. Do not be swept along by the ideas of the powerful. The Romans text is also a reminder to believers to think differently than the domineering and dividing voices around us. Baptism into Christ calls for a different life. The pull of the larger culture to fall asleep must be resisted. We need to stay awake. Read as a group, these texts offer an image of a better future in order to call us to live justly in the present. Our attention this Advent to the experiences of migrants is one way we can stay awake to the signs of the times. I have been reading the book Jesus Was a Migrant by Deirdre Cornell. In it, she writes of being shaped by the Catholic worker movement and tells stories of her decades of assisting migrants on both sides of the Mexico-U.S. border. She makes the case for incarnation and the story of God's people as being one of migration. I took note of her mention early in the book of a Hebrew phrase, tikkun olam. With some direction from one of our resident scholars, Paul Keim, here's what I learned. Tikkun olam is Hebrew for world repair, or repairing the world. It's used in a variety of contexts, from ancient Jewish mysticism to contemporary social activism, to convey that the world is profoundly broken and it's up to humanity to repair it. Tikkun olam is central to the Jewish mystical account of creation, where divine light became contained in special vessels, some of which shattered and scattered, while most of the light returned to its divine source. Some light attached itself to the broken shards. These broken pieces are the basis for evil and the material world. The first human was intended to restore the divine sparks, but sin interfered. As a result, good and evil got all mixed up, and human souls became imprisoned in those shards. So, the tikkun olam, the repair that is needed, is two-part: the gathering of the light and the freeing of souls, to be achieved by humans through religious acts. The goal is to return all things to a world before disaster by undoing the world as we know it. So what if we would read this Matthew text as being about the urgency of repairing the world? Then two will be in the field. One will be driven from home by deforestation and drought. The other will go home to clean running water. Two women will be grinding meal together. One will struggle with body image. Two will be working side by side in the factory. One will be arrested in an ICE raid. Two will never have smoked. One will get lung cancer. Keep awake, therefore, for you do not know when this will change, only that we can't live this way forever. Again, I know I am taking a lot of liberties with this text, but everything else I know about Jesus, how he lived and how he taught, suggests that how we live in the here and now does matter. I believe that we are invited to follow the way of Christ because of love, not out of fear. I make choices about how I treat others and the planet not to avoid punishment, but to do my part to repair the world for today and the future. This, to me, is tikkun olam. Living in this way requires courage and trust in the face of uncertainty. But we are invited to join this repair work around us and within us. We can stay awake to arbitrary separations. We can strive to repair what is worn and dangerous. We can gather the broken shards. We can transform weapons of war into tools for planting gardens. We can make space for incarnation. I'd like to close with excerpts from a reflection and prayer from Rabbi Michael Lerner, the founder of a magazine and organization called Tikkun. I have adapted his words from earlier this week about Thanksgiving to expand them to the season ahead of us. Rabbi Lerner writes, "Given the many troubling developments in our own country and in the world, it is important for our psychological and spiritual health to take time to give thanks for the good that still sustains us. We do this while simultaneously affirming our solidarity with those who suffer harm because of greed and abuse of power. Today, we give thanks for all the beauty, the goodness, the friends and neighbors, and the miracles that surround us every day, and to which we have given too little conscious attention. Our beautiful and life-sustaining planet is in danger. So as we enter Advent, we recommit ourselves to reverse the processes that threaten the life support systems of the planet and to preserve the rich diversity of life and of beauty that we experience daily. In the spirit of Advent, we affirm our dedication to peace, social justice, environmental sanity, and a world based on love, caring, kindness, and generosity. We will repair the world, joining God's dream to make a way where there is no way. And so it is. Amen."